Hello, 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 and welcome to Tease Me. This is a podcast about the intersection of golf, business, and life. And occasionally we'll drop some gems on networking and just how that makes your life better. Because knowing more than one person is actually a good thing. Hello, Tease Me listeners. Welcome back to another episode. You know, this is actually the final episode for season two. Season two is gems. It's all about the information that our guests were sharing, and we're super grateful for them. Thank you for everyone listening. I mean, what would this be without you listening? It'd just be me talking to myself. And how much fun is that, really? I'd like to say shout out to all of my guests who are literally changing the game and using golf as a medium to just explore relationships and build up their businesses. It's December, so if you owe people money, businesses that is, give them their money because they need to close their books. And it'd be nice to have the cash on hand so that when you look at your year and the profitability, you can smile and think that no one owes me money. And if you promised me that you were going to close a deal or a sale and you haven't called me yet, don't worry. There's still time. I am happy to invoice you and you can pay up front. No worries. This is how we do business. And if you have not looked at your bottom line or looked at your calculations for the end of the year, I'm not really sure you're running your business. Thinking about our finances is the most critical part of running any business. I digress. Speaking of business, I had a chance encounter with our guest for today's episode. And while we were at the African American Golf Expo, I actually met a number of amazing people who I will be bringing on the show shortly. But for today, our guest is Dr. Al B. Quarles Jr., who was born and raised in Abington, Pennsylvania. He attended Millersville University of Pennsylvania, where he earned a Bachelor of Science degree. He attended Temple University, where he earned a master's degree in educational psychology, and Gwynedd Mercy University, where he earned a doctorate in educational leadership. Al is a proud co-founder and long-term president and tournament and travel director of the Bogey Boys Golf Club and founder of the award-winning Bogey Kids Junior Golf Mentoring Program. Al is the co-owner of Buckafogey Sports LLC, which is an apparel company that also provides consultation and management for golf travel. On social media, Al is a co-founder and moderator of the Black Golf Alliance, LLC, which boasts close to 7,000 active members on multiple social media platforms, and an annual Juneteenth golf celebration and fundraiser. In addition, Al has been the tournament director of over 30 golf tournaments, including the annual DMP Ministries Charity Golf Tournament held in Houston, Texas, and numerous other tournaments held across the United States. Al has hosted podcasts, written golf articles, and served as a reporter for the African American Golfers Digest. He's been featured in numerous golf-related articles, broadcasts, and forums. Let's welcome our guest, Dr. Al B. Quarles. Okay, hello, hello, Tease Me listeners. Today we have Al Quarles, and you know his company. You've seen the hats on the internet. You've seen these bogey boys playing golf, but I want to introduce you to Al because we met, actually, let's talk about where we met. We met at the first annual African American Golf Expo, and that was in Georgia. And so he had a table and he had his brand and we were wearing the hats, and it was an excellent display because it makes people ask, what does that mean? So Al, tell us about yourself. Where did you come up, before you even start, where did you come up with your company name? Say the name and what it means.
There's a long version and a short version to our name, but I'm gonna give you something in the middle. So the company's Buckafogey Sports, and Buckafogey stands for tenacity, focus, scoring more birdies and less bogeys. The name itself is what we call a spoonerism. So a spoonerism is when you kind of, you know, play with words, switch letters around, and you know, with Buckafogey, what gives the little hook is if you switch the B and the F, you know what I mean? You know, you can kind of get what Buckafogey means. But, you know, honestly, we're really more about, you know, changing the mindset of the average golfer. You know, one of our hashtags is bucket mindset. So it's really about being tenacious, being focused without having the curse. You know what I mean? I was on the course frustrated and making a bunch of noise. And instead of cursing, I just started saying, Buckafogey. Like, I'm just tired of this. It's time to go to the next level. So, you know, I'm a bogey boy at heart. I started the Bogey Boys Golf Club, and we've been around for about 18 years. We're coming up on Mancation number 17, our trip. And, you know, I've always been a bogey boy at heart, but there came a point in my life where I said, you know, I want to score. You know, I want to make, you know, I need to be a single digit handicap. I need to win more skids money. I need to be focused. So the bogey boy is in my heart, but buck of fogey's on my mind every time I step on the course.
Got it. So I often talk about your score doesn't matter. It's just about having a good time. It sounds like you're in direct conflict with what I'm telling people. What
are your thoughts? Yes. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it comes a time in the, I'm an ex-athlete, you know what I mean? So not college athlete, not, you know, pro athlete, but, you know, just an athlete, you know, where I've been competing with my friends all of my life. I mean, we started in elementary school playing football, softball, soccer, you know, and it never stopped. And now, you know, that I'm too old to run up and down the basketball court, you know, I make sure that, you know, I compete and I want to put it on my friends. So, you know, my dad was that guy. My dad would come home with his buddies after playing golf and they would laugh and joke about how much fun they had beating everybody. You know what I mean? So it was, you know, it was in my heart. So, you know, I want to win. Like, I'm very competitive and I want to win. And I wanted to win as a bogey boy. I won our club championship twice and I want to win every year. So, you know, I guess, you know, I think that, like, on our trips, the bogey boy trips, half of the guys want to come out there, have a good time. They don't care what they score. You know, they just want to have fellowship, have fun, you know, laugh, you know, but we make sure we play three over par for that max. You know, you're not going to be out here all day, because even though we're having a great time, there's the other half of guys who want a trophy, you know, and we have four flights. So everybody has a chance to win, you know, so. You know, yeah, I'm competitive. We've created an arena for competition. Like, you know, with all the groups I'm in, the Black Golf Alliance and the Bogey Boys and all I'm doing, like what I keep telling my friends is, if you want to get better at this game, we are creating an arena for that. We're creating an arena where you can come and put your skills on the line, whether that's A flight, B flight, C flight, senior flight. And I think we need that. And what I'm finding is people are really embracing that. So, yeah, I totally understand that half the folks out there just want to have a good time. But the other half are like, you know, I want to win. So, you know, that's where buck of fogey comes in. We're trying to get there. We're trying to win. I'm trying to win.
I got it. So winning clearly has some priority in your life clearly, and in your game. Clearly. Yeah. But if you were to tell people that are afraid of like competition, like if you're talking about like a newer golfer or an emerging golfer, somebody that's just getting in the game, that could be very intimidating. How do you welcome them into the fold?
Well, A, first of all, everybody's horrible in the game of golf. So all this mess that I'm talking does not mean that I'm good. It means I want to beat my friends. So, you know, what I tell folks is, you know, you really have to understand, once you are able to keep pace of play in this game of golf, if you learn it well enough to be able to just move, if you're hitting it for the seventh time, pick it up, put it in your pocket, have a good time, sit in the cart and cheer on the next guy. Just learn to keep the game moving, because that's really the epidemic right now, slow play. So everybody's horrible. I go to the course, I've been for years. Once I realized that all these guys that look like pros are horrible, I could go out and play with anybody. You know what I mean? Especially once you can break 100, there's nobody in the world you can't play golf with. I mean, you just got to be able to keep it moving. And, you know, that's how we do it. Like, we make our pairings accordingly. So if we have a 25 to 30 handicapper, we make sure low handicaps in the group, couple mid guys, because we learn from each other. It keeps pace going. And, you know, it just kind of keeps it fun. And, you know, and we, like I said, we play three over par max with the bogey boy trips. And, you know, and that keeps it fun. I mean, it's not going to be too painful. The worst you're going to get is a seven, like, you know. Take it and keep moving. And, you know, so my thing is, you know, come out, you know, enjoy the fellowship and just don't take it too seriously. Understand that everybody's hitting bad shots. Everybody is going to have a hard time. You know, if you think that you're coming out here with a bunch of pros, you're in the wrong place, the wrong sport. And I think that is what keeps our guys coming back. Because once they come out and they realize, hey, you know, this is, you know, this is fun and it's not painful and, you know, things like that. It's really, it's good. Now, I would encourage you that if you're going to go to something like that, you at least take some lessons. You at least, you know, go out once or twice. because I've taken people on a course for the first time without any of that other stuff. And it was really hard for them. It was painful. You know what I mean? When you're, I mean, it can really be painful if you're not ready for that. So, you know, but it doesn't mean you have to be good. I mean, it just means you have to understand the game, be able to hit a few good shots and shake off the bad shots.
Absolutely. But let's take a step back. You mentioned that your father was playing. So how did you develop a love for the game? Because you clearly have a love for the game.
Absolutely. So my dad, I'm sitting in the man cave now, and my dad in the man cave had trophies throughout the entire basement when I was a kid. My dad learned to play at a time where, you know, as we talk about, he's passed now. And he learned to play at a time where it really wasn't popular for Black folks to be out there in some of these courses. And he was in the Air Force. And one of his commanding officers took a liking in my dad, really liked my dad. My dad was a great mechanic. And one of the guys who I believe was a pilot, the story goes, you know, would take my dad out on the runway and just they would hit balls. And my dad loved it. And he took right to the sport. And whenever he, you know, was home, he was playing and a couple of his buddies around, you know, he grew up in Wilmington, Delaware. When he'd come back home, we're playing and, you know, he just really took to it. And then it got to the point where he was playing in military tournaments when he was stationed in Willow Grove, Pennsylvania. And they would play against, you know, Army, Air Force, Navy, Marines. They would have tournaments. And it got to the point where he was winning those tournaments. He's the only brother out there. And he was out there winning those tournaments. He played for the Shriners. He was on the Shriners golf team. He was a member of a local municipal corps. And they played all the time. He played all the time. He took me until I was about 12. I had one club. I had a female five iron with a blue grip. And he took me and we would, you know, he would, after work, after dinner, you know, in the spring and summer, he would walk nine holes. He would take me with him. And he built the love in the game for me. And once I hit 12 and he had to start paying for me, he told me I wasn't listening to him. He said, you can't go, you don't listen. My dad was cheap. And, you know, but he really instilled a love of the game in me. He taught me all the fundamentals and the basics. And all it really meant was me and my buddies would go over to school and hit golf balls. You know, a couple of my buddies' dads played when I was growing up. And, you know, so that's where it came from. You know, so my goal now, honestly, he was about a 6 handicap. You know, so my goal now is to be as good as him. That's my goal. I just want to be as good as him. I don't want to be a pro. I don't want to be, you know what I mean? If I can get to a 6 and just kind of carry that comfortably, I have arrived.
Okay. Well, it's in your genes. So I think it's a possibility. It's not Absolutely. Like you're trying to ask for something that's out of reach.
Correct.
Let's take a step back. Like, your background is in educational leadership and psychology.
Well, my doctorate is in educational leadership. My master's is in educational psychology. And my bachelor's is in speech communication. So go figure, right? I have a behavioral health background primarily through education. Right now, I'm an administrator for the School District of Philadelphia, where I work with homeless and emergency services. For Philadelphia County. So I'm the regional coordinator. I have the county. I have all the charter schools. I have all the public schools. I train teachers. I train, you know, administrators, counselors, and I make sure that all of them have programs in place to support their population. So that's what I currently do for the school district.
Excellent. And so in that space, do you get to use golf for your career?
Well, that's another career. You know, I really am creating one of my goals is to, I want to be a professor, which is why I went back and got my doctorate. And one of my current goals is to, when I retire, and I want to retire in the next 2 years from my current position, I want to teach classes, I want to run Buckle Fogey Sports, I want to run golf trips, and I want to really kind of help my wife to, she's finishing her master's in early childhood in May, and she's a teacher now. We want to open an early childhood center. So I want to run all my businesses from the back office while she's out front, if that makes sense. Oh,
awesome. It does make sense. It sounds very strategic and well organized.
Yeah, that's what I want to do. So I want to leave the school district, and I love my job. It's easy. It's fun. I get to really make an impact. But, you know, it's time for me to, I want to teach at the HBCU. I went down to Prairie View with my daughter on the tour, and I fell in love with it. I was like, I want to be here. And then I met a guy who played golf there, and I looked at the list and they had some players on there. So I like that. I was like, you know, this is an environment for me. So, you know, I really don't currently do a lot with the game at work. But, you know, I have met some great people who play through work. But, you know, for the most part, you know, I go to work and I handle my business when it comes to the students.
So have you gotten your daughter into golf?
Both of my daughters, my youngest daughter, I gave her clubs at birth. I mean, I was a new dad and I was excited, and, you know, and she got into it and she was hitting clubs and, you know, she would go out a little bit with me and I had a little junior program through the Bogey Boys and she was part of that. And then, you know, it started getting harder because usually what happened, it's selfish, but a lot of the times where programs were going on, like both my daughters were in the first tee. And the first tee, like, it's Saturday morning at, you know, when the Philly Strokers play, you know what I mean? So it was really tough. And, you know, my wife at the time didn't drive and, you know, it just was really tough. So I had to make some decisions. They liked the game, but they weren't gung-ho. So if they would have been like, yeah, I want to play, you know, I would have made sure that happened. But then, you know, it was like, you know, it was one of those, I was trying to get a balance and, you know, I had a plan, you know, so my plan and their plan was a little different. I know that sounds selfish, but I talked to them about it all the time. They were like, no, we're okay. You know, we want to play, you know, so they'll just want to play like when we go on vacations or stuff like that. My middle daughter, to be totally honest, I think she could really be good. She's an athlete. My older daughter has got girly on me. So now, you know, she don't want to mess her nails up, you know, so I don't feel bad about that. My middle daughter, who's in ninth grade, I think she'd be a really good golfer. I really do. So I'm thinking about starting to take her out with me next season. And then I have a little guy who he's 7 and he just won't listen. He's like my dad said I was. You know what I mean? So I take him, I know how to do that. He don't want no instruction. He's like, just let me hit balls and get away from me. And me, I'm like, this is not going to work. So I let him hit balls, but I haven't taken him out. So I think once I take him out and let him get in the cart and get a hot dog at the turn and everything else, it's going to take off. Because he's the one I really want to, because he's young enough. He's the one I really want to start working with. But he just has to be ready. And I'm just concerned that he's not ready. And I don't want to force it on him. I don't want to make him, you know, have this passion for golf. If anything, I want him to come to me and say, hey, Daddy, I want to learn how to play because he sees what I'm doing. So we'll see. I'm trying to find a balance in between all of that.
That's a lot. That's a lot of people and a lot of stuff. Yeah. And that's a lot of golf.
It's a lot. It really is.
But you know what's very powerful with young ladies, you know, investing in your middle daughter, there are a lot of scholarships for women that play golf. And if she's athletic in the way that you say, she'll adopt it pretty quickly and master it. And if she's competitive the way you are, she might be a problem.
I think she could be a problem. I really do. So I've told myself, like, my oldest is about to graduate, but I've told myself that, you know, my middle daughter and my son are going to have to start. I'm need some folks to play with me. You know what I mean? And honestly, I would just as soon play with them as I would with my friends. You know what I mean? And I think they're getting to the age and the place now where I could do that. I'll just as soon take them out on Sunday afternoon and play with my kids. I think that would be just as fun for me. I think I'm ready for that now. And I think that, you know, we're all at the point where next year, I think will be our year to grow as a golf family.
Awesome. Awesome. I mean, driving the cart makes it all worthwhile.
Yeah. My youngest loved it. Like she, you know, but then, like I said, it kind of got to a place where, you know, and then, you know, just the life stuff happens and, you know, so. We're going to make it work.
So let's go back to Becca Foggy. Tell us about just the process of building a brand.
Well, I think that I learned a whole lot through this process. And it's kind of, how can I best describe this? It's a coming of age story, I guess, for lack of a better term, because I really had no idea what it took to get into this and what to do. And I asked some folks who I thought were doing it well. I'm not going to mention any names because I have nothing but respect for folks, but people almost told me nothing. Like, they gave me a few ideas, but I learned how valuable having, your own manufacturing is and things like that. And, you know, I had to go to, I think the best advice anybody gave me, because nobody would let me know who was making their stuff. And like now when people ask me, I'm almost like offended. It's crazy, but just, I guess, through that process, it's almost like, do you ask Nike who makes their stuff? Like, do you, you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of becomes personal because it's such a process. And like, you know, my process started, you know, the best advice I was given is go to a trade show. You know what I mean? Go to a trade show. That was a sound piece of advice. And that's what I tell people now. Like, I'm not, you know, I mean, I want to help as many people as I can. Part of what we want to do is we want to help build brands. So, you know, we would like to be at the point where we can help other companies through our, under our umbrella is what we would like to do. You know, it's not the easiest thing to propose in our community. I haven't got a lot of, people would rather me tell them all my stuff, which is okay. You know, I, like I said, cause I wanted people to tell me, so I'm not, I don't feel any way kind of way about that, but you know, we went to a trade show and started, building, you know, relationships and, you know, and getting samples and trial and error, you know, so that was probably, you know, the hardest part, getting to the point where, like, our stuff is made from fabric, you know, like, you know, I think I see a lot of people starting out, they'll, you know, put their logo on other people's clothes or things like that. And that's okay. I mean, you have to start somewhere. Just keep putting it back in your business and building and building. But, you know, we finally got to the point where we're designing and getting all of our stuff made from fabric, including our hats, which is, you know, really a great thing. We didn't start like that 2 years ago. But that's such a personal process. You have to go through a lot of growing pains and trial and error, and you know, and I would also say make sure your stuff is protected. Like, if I had to talk about that process, we had to make sure that our trademarks were in, and you know, everything was, all of our T's were crossed, our I's were dotted, you know, all of our stuff had to be legit. You know, I mean, I think that we keep ourselves open a lot of times by not really doing that. I learned that as an author when I looked up one day and it appeared that Netflix had did something based on one of my books. You know, I learned, and I was covered. I was copywritten and everything was done. And, you know, it benefited me because, you know, I didn't have to do a bunch of, proving anything because it was already done. So I say that to say, you have to follow the correct steps. You have to make sure you are, you know, branded, trademarked, copywritten, anything it requires for your specific business, you have to do. You know, you have to really kind of take care of that. And other than that, just customer service. I think my biggest thing is really most of our, this is crazy, but I have two Facebook pages. I have my Buckle Fogey Facebook page and I have my personal Facebook page. My personal Facebook, my friends, family, people I've known forever, almost none of them ever buy anything from Buckle Fogey. Almost never. Okay. Like, I think I might have sold like three things to my 4,000 Facebook friends. You know what I mean? But my God family are so supportive and I make sure that I don't take that for granted. So we are customer service friendly. Like, you know what I mean? If you have an issue, I'm taking care of your issue. If you, you know, if something is wrong, I'm gonna make it right. You know what I mean? If I can throw something extra in your box, I'm gonna throw something extra in your box. Like, you know, I treat people how I would want to be treated. And, you know, and I'm proud when I read our reviews, because if I look at our website and I look at the reviews that people put on there, like, I take that seriously. Like, I really, if there's a review that's not favorable, which is very, very, very seldom, but if it does happen, like, I would make it right. You know what I mean? Like, it's personal. Like, you know, four, like, you gave me a four. Like, what can we do to get a five? I want your five. You know what I mean? And I think that's a big thing. And I think the last thing right now for us that I think that will really help us go to the next level is the same way that my personal friends haven't supported, like, my guy family. It's like, out of all the sales that we've done the last year and a half, and we've done pretty good, you know, we almost have very few people that are not African-American. You know what I mean? So we really are at the point now where I think once, because our quality is there. Our, you know, brand is growing, you know. So I think once we are introduced at the PGA show coming up, you know, I have little ones. Once we're introduced at the PGA show, I think that we're going to really be able to, you know, get the attention of the industry.
So let's talk about that, you know, that ability to cross over and reach other markets.
Yes.
What was the step in the process for you to become part of the PGA show?
So, well, that happened at the African-American Golf Expo and Forum, you know, which was wonderful. James Beatty and the wonderful folks involved in that endeavor really gave us the opportunity to showcase our wares and really kind of put our best foot forward, you know, meet some folks, you know, make some connections, which included, you know, connections to the PGA show. And it was really just kind of created an opportunity where we could, you know, really kind of, you know, put ourselves out there. That even included being able to meet folks at the PGA Superstore, you know, and I've had conversations with them, and it just, everything, I think timing is everything. I think, you know, for us, timing is everything, really not doing anything before we're truly ready. You know what I mean? We don't want to set ourselves up to fail. Making these strong relationships along the way so that, you know, we can continue to lift each other up and we won't fall back, but so far because we're lifting each other up along the process. So, you know, I think that's where, you know, it all began as far as going to the PGA show at the forum. You know, it was a family environment. I met you there and, you know, the Bird from the Digest, who I've always loved, and, you know, just some really great folks. And then they had the contest, you know, kind of share your story contest. And we just shared our story. You know, I talked about myself a little bit, you know, some of the personal challenges that I've had. You know, I've overcome cancer. You know, I've overcome stuff, you know, and, you know, through it all, you know, I stand here strong and proud and ready to go to the next level. So, you know, that was a great opportunity. And I'm just hoping that, you know, through this opportunity, we make some additional partnerships. Like, I don't need a thousand partnerships. I don't need to make a whole bunch of money. I just want to continue to grow at our pace, you know, for the right reasons with the right folks. And I know that eventually that's going to pay off and we'll be able to really bless some folks, you know? So I'm excited about it. Like, we're not going to look back. Like, we're connecting now to a bunch of juniors and a bunch of, you know, young guns, as I like to call them, some folks who really are trying to get on this APGA tour and Corn Ferry and work their way up. But we're just trying to bless some folks. Like, it's nothing for us to bless some young folks and just continue to build these relationships. And, you know, that's really what we're trying to do. So, you know, trying to grow it organically, you know, and at the same time, you know, making sure our products are the best. Like, I don't want to give one of my hats to one of the, I'm not going to mention no names, to one of these young guys who are out there playing on these little tours or doing something like that. And they feel like they have a subpar hat on. You know, this isn't good as Titleist. This hat isn't good. Like, if you hold my hat next to a Titleist hat, my hat is as good or better than a Titleist hat. You know, and I'm proud about that. I'm really proud about that. I'm proud that everybody's like, yo, your quality of these products. I'm like, that's what we're doing. So we're just really trying to grow it organically. So we'll see what happens. I really don't know what to expect at the expo. I've been there 15, 16 years ago, and it was overwhelming. You know, I was there as a vendor who had no idea. The Bogey Boys, when we started, we wanted to do apparel. That was my first dibble and dabble with apparel. And ever since then, whenever we have trips, I'm the one that does the Bogey Boy shirts for the trips. I'm the one that does the hats. So I've always done this. I've always made my own hats. I've always, you know, but I had different ways that I was doing it. I didn't have my own manufacturing per se, but I was always getting it done. And we were there with a few shirts we had made and a few hats. We were in the diversity pavilion with the Burt. And I have no idea what we were even doing, to be totally honest. I have no idea. We weren't ready to take orders. We weren't ready. We were really trying to network. we were trying to meet some people and say, hey, you know, how can we grow, you know, our new brand, you know, and help you grow your brand? Because we got these great group of guys and we want to work together. And yeah, yeah. And we met some like some great people. We really did. You know, so Alex, I've been close to DeBird ever since. We met the Stingleys, who had a putter company, and they come on my bogey boy trips. And then we met a bunch of other people, because, you know, in the whole PGA show, the 40,000 people, I think it was 20 black people there.
Oh, no, totally. I was there counting. I mean, the year I went, I was like, my goal is like, where's Waldo? Try to find every black person there. And, full confession, that was like my own personal little goal.
Yes. So we met all 20. I got business cards. We did this. And when we got back, almost nobody wanted to work with us. Like, the only folks who stayed true was the Burt and the Stingleys. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and the Stingleys, unfortunately, putter company had to close. And all the other companies that were there are no longer in existence.
Hey, let's talk about reinvestment, because you can go to that show, but if the money is not going or being sent your direction and you're not able to build the capacity or get access to the additional support, then how can you grow your company? And, you know, when I was thinking about what you were saying with manufacturing, yeah, a lot of people don't know how to do the research or do the process, but there's no reason why you can't serve as a middleman and do the production with a, you know, margin, of course. Absolutely. And there's that space where you know that there's those partnerships and those alliances are happening at the PGA show, but they're not being extended to everyone. Right. And that is what, you know, there's this push for diversity, inclusion, and equity, but there's not necessarily a conversation about how will it be equitably distributed? You right. have this person that can produce, you know, massive production for like Titleist, like they right. can make hats, shirts, right. golf clubs, right. golf balls, golf. So clearly you have some access.
Yes. And, you know, in my experience, because they, I mean, 15, 16 years ago, I was at those meetings at the show and they were talking about diversity and they were talking about this 15, 16 years ago, same conversations. One of the things I learned is diversity doesn't always mean black.
Are we ready to go there? Can we talk about that? So we get to. Okay, let's go here.
It means we're going to be diverse. And you can be diverse and not be black. So, I mean, you know,
I once worked at a company where they were bragging about the diversity because one person was from Spain, another one was from Transylvania, and one was from France. And I was like, okay, talk to me about the diversity in that space, because I'm not quite understanding it. But that was the conversation, because they were from all different regions of Europe.
Correct. So, I mean, that's, you know, and like I said, I'm not anti anyone. I think that we can all eat. I just think that we really have to, you know, be honest about a lot of the things. But I think I'm seeing progress. I'm excited. I'm excited to go to the PGA show. I'm excited for, you know, the conversations I've had with the folks setting up the show. They've been more than accommodating. They've been friendly. They've sent folks my way that have been helpful, you know, very responsive. So I feel good about it. I'm ready.
So I'm excited for you too. And I think that that's the bigger part of the conversation. The opportunity is there and there's enough for everyone. I think the challenge is making sure that there's an awareness of the brands that are ready to be there. So had it not been for the conversation and the brokering of that introduction, then this opportunity to get access to those resources may not have necessarily occurred. And there's always that conversation. How do you get more introductions?
And it's right. And it's expensive. I mean, you know, through winning second place, we were blessed with being able to have, you know, half off of our booth space. So that was what we won for, you know, coming in second place. If it was full price, we would not have been able to afford it. So being a young, small, you know, Black-owned company, I mean, really, because the booth space is really just a booth space. I mean, you have to pay for the electricity. You have to pay for, if you want a table, unless you bring your own, you have to pay for chairs. You know, you have to pay for, you know, something on your floor. You know, you have to get there. You have to, you know, pay for your hotel room for, you know, at least 5 days. You know, we have to drive from Pennsylvania because there's no way we can get all our stuff there if we didn't drive. So, you know, there's so many factors. If you want to be in the, you know, the new product showcase for like a 3-foot table, I believe it's like maybe $1,500 to put like one of your products in that area. You know, so there's so many costs associated with this. It almost prices us out.
It does, you know, price us out, and it costs a case to play. And there's not a sliding scale model. So it'd be different if you said, if your revenue is greater than $1 million and your the cost of participation in a package is X, Y, or Z amount. And I think to your point, if you start to think about how do I increase the diversity or increase the ability for other brands that are really good, can I look at, and I think when I think about the PGA and just ways that they can, you know, talk to vendors like yourself and say, what would have helped? Either aligning me with strategic partners that can help me grow my brand, and then I potentially be under their umbrella, you know, Shark Tank-ish.
Sure.
Or look at it from the perspective of, well, we'll have an accommodation for people that are making under a certain amount, and we'll allow for X number of businesses, because everyone doesn't have a financier or someone backing all of their finances to put their product out there. So, because there were some strange products out there, and I'm like, how did you get a whole table for this? That's interesting.
Yeah. But
maybe they have the money.
They must have the money. I mean, like you said, you have to pay to play. And this is an industry that, you know, it really, you know, it closes doors. You know, it really closes doors. But I really had to think, like, you know, can we really afford to do this? You know, is it going to be cost effective? And, you know, my thing is, you know, it's time to, you know, I'm stepping out on faith. We're just going to step out on faith. We're going to believe. We're going to stay prayerful. I mean, 100%, you know, going on the way down, on the way back. And, you know, and I believe it's going to work. I really do. You know, what's going to work, how it's going to work, you know, I'm staying open-minded about that. But I'm going to be ready. We're going to be taking orders and, you know, building partnerships and relationships. And, you know, I think once they get it, they're really going to get it. I think Buckle Fogey's really going to sell. And I think initially the name is a little shocking to folks, is what I'm learning. It's like, it's either like, you're like, oh my God, I love that. Or you're like, wow, I can't put that on my hat. You know what I mean? It's like either or.
Wait, you have to add one more. What does that mean? What does that mean?
Most of the people who ask what it means know what it means. I'm learning.
They need to hear you say it. They need to just make sure that their mind is. I think that's the psychology in you. That's your psychology piece coming out. Because you have that. You want people to think something and then trick, and they're like, is my mind playing tricks on me? Do we just transpose those numbers, or what's happening?
Right. So that's part of it too. So there is three pieces. You know, I think once it hits, it's going to hit. Because I mean, the reality I think that the industry is typically clean shaven, shirt tucked in, belt, you know, shoes, you know, just which is great. But I think that the majority of us don't look like that. The majority of us don't think like that. And I think that the majority of us really will get it. And I think, you know, Buckle Fogey's going to take off. I really do.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, things that are witty and things that are racy and spicy, that's universal. It has nothing to do with man or woman, race, creed, anything. If it's catchy and it's spicy, people like to kind of push. Some people like to push the limit, but slightly, just like slightly.
Totally. I mean, I have pastors that wear my stuff. You know what I mean? Because I honestly, I'm not. Even though, like I said, it's racy and it's a spoonerism, I'm really not trying to curse. Like, I don't want to curse. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not, you know, putting this on my hat to be walking around cursing at people. You know what I mean? It's my mindset without cursing is what it really is.
Got it. So let's take a step back. You mentioned that you wrote a book. Tell us about that. It's missing from your bio.
I wrote a couple books, actually. I wrote a series called the Burn the Sand series. And the Burn the Sand series is a story about two young men who grow up in suburban Philadelphia and they're, you know, really kind of encapsulated and, you know, really just really fascinated by, you know, this concept of fraternities. I mean, their families, some of their family members, the people they were working with in high school, they would go to the Greek picnic in the summer. They would go to Penn Relays in Philly. So they were like, what is all this Greek stuff that people are talking about? And then they go to an HBCU, meet up with three other guys, become a clique, and want a pledge. They want a pledge of fraternity. So Bernard Sands takes five young men on a journey into a fraternity. All of the genuine, actual fraternities are fairly represented in the book, and they pledge a fictitious fraternity. So I'm not giving away any trade secrets, but I pledged in the 80s. And, people pledged in the 80s. Not that they don't now or before, but, you know, it pretty much was standard. Like, you know, so I told the story. Like, most of my roommates were Qs. My sister's an AKA. My brother-in-law's a Q. I'm a Kappa. You know, all my line brothers, the people pledged before me and after me. And, you know, I have alphas in my family. I have one of my cousins was in one of the first lines of IOTA. So I've heard all these stories all my life. So I wanted to tell stories. I wanted to tell, you know, what would make somebody want to pledge a fraternity? Because you get paddled, you get big. Why would somebody do that? Like, why? What is on your mind to go through something like that? Like, I had friends at home that would be like, why would you do that? You know what I mean? Like, I don't get it. Either that or they be like, I could do that. You know, I'm a dog. You know, like, well, it's a different world, like that show used to be. And I wanted to tell a story. What happened was I watched Spike Lee's School Days and it made me mad. Like, I was upset with the movie. I thought it was a spoof. I thought that he was, you know, really kind of downplaying the whole thing. And I'm like, no, there are brothers in my fraternity who I can't stand. There are brothers in other fraternities I can't stand. You're dealing with individuals. You know what I mean? You really can't stereotype all these organizations. There are brothers in my fraternity that I'd jump in front of a bullet for. You know what I mean? Like, I just love these dudes. You know what I mean? So, you know, it's telling a story about who would want to pledge. Why would you want to pledge? What the process was like, because it's not like that anymore. So, you know, I wanted to keep that story alive too. You know, you did some stories in this book, you know, in these books. It's two books. So that's the Bernard Sands series. And I'm starting to get into children's books. So the first one I wrote with my middle daughter is called Bullies Are Not Just Boys. It's about bullying. It's a children's book. All these books are on Amazon. You want to check them out. But then I just wrote another one called Snitches Get Stitches. It's the young male version of Bullies Are Not Just Boys. I'm about to put that out. I've done all my illustrations, and it's just a matter of putting it out. So, you know, I'm trying to just keep expanding. I challenge myself.
So, yeah, clearly you have like 10 jobs. I mean, I keep interviewing people with 10 jobs. I mean, you're out here, you know, we're normalizing excessive work here in this space, but I have 10 jobs too. So that's why.
I know you do. And all my boys are like, when do you sleep? You know, and I got a 7-year-old, you know, I'm a soccer dad. So, yeah.
But wait, let's talk about the process of writing a book. So for those that are listening, you've built a brand around, you know, the hats and the clothing and the attire and just the concept of a golf family and community, but then you're also writing books. So talk to us about what that process has been like to author a book and author multiple books.
I always want to challenge myself, and you know, if it's a challenge in front of me, I got my master's through a challenge. I got my doctorate through a challenge. Like, if people challenge me and it sounds like a challenge I want to, you know, take on, I'm going to go for it. I don't know. I'm competitive, and I just really like, I don't want to leave nothing on the table. You know, when I leave here, and like I said, having been diagnosed with cancer, I needed to get both of those books out. You know what I mean? I actually met my wife on a cruise ship writing my book. She was working on the ship and walking by me every day. And I'm writing my book every morning and just started talking to her. That's another story. But I think that really just getting your work on paper is the first step. You know what I mean? Writing a chapter. If you have to put it up for a month, put it up for a month. If you get in a phase where you can just write, take advantage of that. Like, you know, I'll be in a phase where I could just write for days and then it'll just hit a wall. You know, so take advantage of those creative moments and those opportunities to just get it on paper. If you have to come back to it, come back to it. Because honestly, right now, the ability to publish has never been easier. You know what I mean? With all of these Amazon Create Space and all these editing folks and different programs and access to illustrators and all this different stuff, you can almost publish a book for very little money. You know what I mean? Like, it depends on how high tech you want to go, but I used Amazon Create Space to do my books. I had to get them formatted. I had to get them edited. They could probably use to get edited again, only because, especially the novels, because like I said, I was sick at one of those periods in my life and I wanted to get them out. And I had them edited, but you know, as I look back, they're not clean as I'd want them to be. But, you know, once they were formatted, I was able to upload them. And, you know, I got my artwork done professionally. I didn't spend an arm and a leg for that. And they look phenomenal. And they're, you know, they're really good. And it didn't take a lot. It was a lot easier than I thought. So I tell folks, get it on paper, you know, write it down, you know, send somebody a chapter, let them read it, you know, just keep going with it, you know. I don't know if there's a specific format you should follow.
Well, I'll pause because I think the issue that people struggle, you know, you can get the technical skills of how to create the book, but I think people struggle with organizing their ideas and really getting it from their head to paper, or even coming up with the fact that, like, you don't need to know what a whole book is about to write. So right. Talk to us about, like, just the purging process that you use to come up with the idea to begin with.
I looked at stories I've heard and stuff I've experienced and things like that to create a chapter outline. So like I knew, for example, when I was a freshman in college, there was an initiation called The Hill. And on The Hill, so The Hill had to be a chapter. Regardless of what the book was about, The Hill had to be a chapter. It was a freshman initiation. They would take all the freshmen out. It was summertime, like right when school started, you know, into the woods, deep into the woods. They would have cheap wine in the trunk all day. All the freshmen would give up $3 or $2. All the upperclassmen, yeah, make sure you drink a bunch of milk, you know, coat your stomach real well. And idiots are drinking milk. You know, then they lead you out into the woods in the middle of the day, light a bonfire and start handing out bottles of wine, trying to get 10 counts and stuff like that. Because you want a trophy. You have to finish the bottle to get a trophy. And then, you know, once you're done, you're completely inebriated. They walk all the freshmen back to campus and let them go. Like, you know,
it's a total PSA. We're not even going to, we already said the school. So I don't know if they still do that. This was at Temple.
No. I didn't go to Temple undergrad. Temple was my master's. That was clean. It wasn't the Temple.
Okay.
I won't mention the name. Okay. We'll call it North Bricks University, which is what it's called in the book.
Got it.
North Bricks. So yeah, it was, you know, that's an example. So I that had to be a chapter, especially for a college-based story that I wanted to tell. So that's how I did it. I you know, characters, you know, I didn't base any characters in any folks. Both main characters are actually born on my birthday. I'm a Gemini, so there are two parts of me. There are two extremes of me. Neither one of them is me. One of them is me to the way left, and one of them is me to the way right. You know what I mean? So that's how I did the main characters. You know what I mean? So I loosely based some characters on a few folks. At least they think they're loosely based on them. I will never admit it. That's what I did. And I just wrote. And then I'd come back and I'd, you know, hey, well, this chapter needs to go here. And then I wrote some more. It was a long process. But, you know, finally, you know, I was like, it's time to get this done. And I had to go on a cruise. I was on a cruise with my family. And that's what every morning I said, I'm going to get this book done. I would go up on top of the deck. I would get my breakfast and I would write. Before we would do an excursion or something, I would put in, you know, 3 hours, 4 hours, whatever. They weren't in no rush to go anywhere. I'd get up early and, you know, I'd write till 11 every day for 7 days. And I got a lot done. I was really impressed. And I met my wife. We became Facebook friends. And I was like, you know what? I need to finish this book. I'm coming back on another cruise. And I went back 2 more cruises by myself. And I got to meet her and get to know her a little bit, you know. And so after three cruises, I said, you know what? I like her. So I went back on another cruise and then we got off and I proposed. So
I love it. I love it. I love love stories. So you're cruising for love. That was so cheesy.
I was cruising for love. It was cheesy. That was kind of cheesy. Funny. I won't admit that in public.
Well, you just did admit it in public. I did. It's okay.
Now it was good though.
Well, okay. Now talk to us more about like this golf community that you've built. What was the importance of building this community, Bogey Boys?
As I mentioned at the PGA show, I met all these folks. And when I got home, it was almost like nobody really wanted to all work together. A lot of folks seemed like they had just about made it. And it seemed like, you know, they were comfortable kind of where they were without really working with a whole bunch of other folks. And that was really disappointing to me. So when on Facebook, I got linked into one of the golf groups, and you know, it wasn't a private group. It was just a wide open group. And a few folks were like, hey, we need our own group. We need our own community. We need our own ability to really kind of work together. You know, we don't have a good old boy system. We do not have a good old boy system. We created the Black Golf Alliance so that we can have a system of support. You know, like I'm supporting everybody. Like you could be an apparel company. You could be, you know, I'm, you know, representing my competition, for lack of a better word. You know, I'm the person who runs the business affiliate program on the Black Golf Alliance because I want to see businesses do well and I want to create an alliance. So we're really trying to align all these pockets of African-Americans and who play the game all across the world, you know, in silos. You know, we're really trying to create events where folks can come together. Do you know, through these connections, my spring mancation trip with the Bogey Boys, I sold out 108 spots in 7 days.
That's very powerful.
Deposits paid. 108 spots. I had a wait list. I mean, I was on my Excel spreadsheet all week, like, But I mean, we created an arena, as I had mentioned earlier, where people can compete. It's a friendly, safe place that if you're not that good, it's not going to be too hard on you. And, you know, you really can, the network of folks that I have come in are so amazing. You know, if we can monetize this. You know, the Bogey Boys started as an investment club. It went left after a few years, so the investment club never really took off. But the more I think, I'm like, we need to start something because it's a powerful, powerful network. I mean, business owners, doctors, lawyers, you know, mechanics. I mean, it's a powerful, powerful network, you know, folks, military people. And, you know, I'm just proud of that. But that's what the Black Golf Alliance is about. It's really about aligning us in a safe environment where we could talk about safe stuff and really feel like, you know, we can be us, you know, be vulnerable, you know what I mean? Laugh at each other, you know what I mean? Support each other, you know, cry when something happens, you know, like, you know, somebody passes in the industry. I mean, all the support comes in and everybody's, you know, memorials and, you know what I mean? So it's really a good environment. And that's what it was about. We just got back from Myrtle Beach Sunday. We had our first winter getaway and it was powerful. It was half women and half men. I'd never been in an event with so many positive Black women at golf. I was like, this is really incredible. And that was the first one. Our Juneteenth event last year was an awesome event. We had, you know, over 80 people in our first one. We were able to give $7,500 to Texas Southern University and, you know, have great fun. And just, so this alliance is really starting to take shape, starting to take form. And I'm really proud about what we're doing. And it's early. Like there's groups with more members than us, but there's nobody with more quality than us.
Excellent. I mean, it's,
yeah.
No, that's excellent. And talk to me more about giving back. So you mentioned like, the junior players that you were giving hats to, and then you spoke about the scholarship. Yeah. What is the strategy or the approach for your give back model?
Well, for Buck and Fogey, it's just trying to bless some folks. Like, you know what I mean? That's all we're trying to do. Like, you know, like Kendall Jackson is like my niece. Like, I love her. I don't even know her. Well, actually, that's not true. I met her She came to our Juneteenth event. I met her father. I met her mother. I met her. We hung out for a couple of days. But I say that to say, it's not like we've always been around each other. But we initially took to each other. And, you know, her dad, we busted up. We message each other. You know, I'm praying for them. They're praying for me. That's just like one example. She's supporting us. We're supporting her. You know, because we're all we got. Like, that's the motto of the Black Alpha Alliance. We all we got. Like, you know what I mean? I don't expect anything more or anything less. I don't have a whole bunch of, you know, expectations for the show or anything else. I mean, the stuff I want, but, you know, I think that as long as we can stay true to us and what we're doing, if we can maintain that and support each other, because I think that is such a need. I mean, we don't have a good old boy system. We don't have a system to really help each other. You know, some of the young guys reach out to me, and I work with, like, you know, Jedediah Frazier. Like, I love Jedediah Frazier. Like, he's a young pro. He's at a golf course now, really trying to break in. Like, we bust it up. He calls me Unc, you know what I mean? He lets me know what he's doing, some of the stuff, his tournaments coming up. You know, he's won, like, 7-8 out of his last, like, 9 tournaments that he was in. You know what I mean? He's gearing up to go on APJ, and he's shooting in the 60s. I mean, like, the young man is thorough. Like, you got, it's a bunch of folks like that. Like, you know, and the young juniors and other stuff. Like, one of our moderators, son, Ro Thompson, his son, Little John, is playing. And Little John won the Juneteenth event in Houston. He was like 14, you know what I mean? He came out there with 80 people and kicked butt, and I loved it. I was like, this is what I'm talking about. So anytime we can get behind that and support that, because working with Ro and understanding Ro Thompson and understanding what it takes to get your junior to that level is a lot of work. I mean, you have to rank, you have to go to all these tournaments. Like, that's a lot of money. Yeah. So if you add in, you know, gear and, you know, hats, the least I could do is give you a shirt and a couple hats. I mean, you know what I mean? That's a win-win to me. You know what I mean? Like, instead of paying a bunch of advertising money, you know what I mean? I'll support us.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So if you look at, you know, our Instagram, you know what I mean? Thousands of pictures of folks wearing our gear. You know what I mean? This is all win-win stuff. You know, and people get behind it and they, you know, they send me pictures all the time. Hey, you know, here, check this out. You know what I mean? And I love it. So, you know, like I said, we all we got. And I think if we continue to grow this way, once it hits mainstream, I think it'll be great. But, you know, that's what the Alliance is about. It's really about breaking down these silos of folks. Like, I got a call today from Uncle E, Eric Nepieu. You know, Eric is, you know, he's Mr. PGA Show himself. Like, he's a, you know, master club builder. You know, he's working for Excalibur Shafts. He's, you know, he's super talented. He made my driver. Just, he's like, he's the guy you go to if you need to get some clubs made. He just called me today to bust it up. You know what I mean? So we're building this network of family that, you know, I think really is going to pay off. I think if we stay true to, you know, our mission, I think that we're really going to, you know, go to the next level. So I'm being patient and I'm just ready. And I think that along the way, if we can bless some folks, we can make some strong partnerships. Like, my goal was for all these juniors to be wearing Buckle Fogey once they get on tour. You know what I mean? Like, if I got it, you got it. Like, yeah, I know stuff is expensive. If I can afford it, I'm sponsoring you. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I'm going to do it. Like, if I can do it, I'm going to do it. You know,
it's a beautiful thing. You lead your business with your heart. It can never fail you.
Yeah. And you, and you know, being a strong believer in Christ, you have to be blessed to be a blessing. So I figure if I'm going to be blessed, I can bless some people. You got to be blessed to bless somebody. So, you know, how can you lose? So that's the way I'm looking at.
That's tremendous. And so, like, we're kind of at time for the podcast, but there's one thing that I have seen that is kind of amazing. So you have a space where your passion is in more than one place. It's in education and leadership, but then it's also in golf and community and building and branding these spaces where people can be seen. You know, tell everyone about, like, what it's like to have more than one passion and be able to execute all with equal energy.
That's a great question. I don't know is the official answer. I tell everybody I have attention deficit disorder. And I truly, truly believe that I do. I believe that I was undiagnosed all my life. And if I was in school now, they'd be trying to put me on meds. But at the same time, I think that I've learned to channel it and use it for my good. So, and I really understand my mortality. Like, I want to leave a mark. You know what I mean? Like, I really want to leave a mark. Like, I don't want to leave having done anything, you know, halfway. Like, you know, I don't want to be any question, well, he should have did this, he should have did that, or I wish I would have, I wish I could have. I have a whole bunch of friends that didn't make it this far. So I don't take it for granted. And, you know, I was supposed to be out of here. Like, I'm miraculous by myself. I mean, literally, you know, it's just miraculous that I'm doing so well for so long. But I don't take it for granted. And I challenge myself. I'm the kind of person where if I'm not a little uneasy about trying to do something, I feel like I'm not doing enough. Like, I always feel like I need to challenge myself. Like, you know, like I've never been the smartest person in the world when it comes to book smarts. Like, I don't test well, put it that way. You know what I mean? If I can explain it on paper, I'll probably knock your socks off because I'm creative. You know, I'm creative and I'm a big thinker and I'm big picture guy, but the detail stuff gets lost in translation sometimes. But, you know, I graduated, I guess this is just a personal testimony for folks. So I failed two classes in 11th grade. Okay. I barely got out of my undergrad because I partied all the time. I think I graduated with like a 2.1. Like, you know what I mean? Like, did he graduate? Like, I was, had a lot of fun. Like, I'm a legend up there. Like, you know, I had a good time. I graduated my master's with a 4.0. I graduated my doctorate with 4.0. Like, you know what I mean? It's, so I'm if anybody could do it, you know what I mean? If I could do it, anybody could do it is what I'm trying to say. And, you know, I just try to inspire some folks and just keep challenging yourself and keep putting your foot forward. And what's really crazy about the whole doctorate thing, and the last part of that testimony is, and I'm good at my job. I'm good at what I do and things like that. So I'm not downplaying any of that. But I was in a doctorate program with deans of college campuses and professors and, you know, administrators and like all these high level ranking folks. And I'm the only one in my cohort that graduated on time.
Wow.
Like, you know, so like to me, I'm like, wow, you know what I mean? A little faith, a little elbow grease, a little ADD, you can get it done. You know, so, you know, I say all that to say, I don't know how all these different visions and passions and stuff come together, but I think with faith, all things are possible. And that's where I leave it. I give it to God. And, you know, I'm really a prayerful guy. Like, I talk to God a lot. And, you know, I'm more spiritual than I am religious, but I get it. You know what I mean? And I know it's greater than me. And he's talked to me and he's showed me. And, you know, so I just, you know, you treat people right, they'll treat you right. And, you know, I have a fear in him. I have a healthy fear in him. So I'm not going to ever cross the line.
Oh, I appreciate that. I feel like this is a good place to end. And let me put some respect on your name, Dr. Al Quarles. Let me make sure that everyone knows that.
Capone is my nickname. That's what everybody called me in Millersville. They were like, Capone.
Okay, Capone. Well, thank you for joining us on Tease Me.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
So there you have it. The last words of the season. Our final episode ends with Dr. Al sharing, if you treat people right, they'll treat you right. And it's bigger than him, and all things are possible through faith. What a great gratitude message to have in December. And it's just not a coincidence. It's not just time that way. I didn't pick him for that reason. It's just that's how it is. When your mind and your heart are aligned and you're doing what God set for you, you'll have an abundance of energy because you're going to keep pushing and keep trying. And you know, you might have down days and you might get distracted, but the reality is it is your obligation and responsibility to do it while your light still shines. So here's my inspiration to you all. Just do it. You've got a few days left in December. You can write a plan. You can manifest it. And maybe that'll be your 2022 goal. So whatever that thing was that you were thinking of doing, it's time to do it. Thanks for joining me on another episode of Tease Me.